The New Testament reading today has one of Paul's splendidly practical essays in Christian living. After all the high-flown theology of the earlier part of Romans, this must have come as a relief to his readers. And yet it flows naturally from it. Christian behaviour has to follow from Christian theology. And in most of Paul's letters, that's the pattern. You can summarise the shape as being 1, this is the truth about God, therefore 2, this is the way you should act. In this particular case, the pattern is doubly appropriate because, having expounded the love of God, he goes on to talk about the attitudes we should have to those whose current understanding of God is defective. So Paul talks about those weaker brethren who have scruples. And note he's quite happy to define them as weaker because he believes that to be the truth. He goes on to ask for tolerance for them, but not on the basis of their opinion being equally correct. They are weaker, he says, because of 2 factors. First of all, they're still legalists at heart. In theory, they know that Jesus has superseded the law of Moses, that they are no longer bound by its precepts in the way that they were, and yet they actually prefer to have lots of rules. And since those are not being provided by the Christian community, they impose them on themselves. They've not yet made Christian freedom a reality. And then secondly, they're still hooked on the idea that you can justify yourself in God's eyes by what you do. They believe they can earn God's love if they are upright enough. The way this manifests itself in the Roman community to which Paul was writing was threefold. I don't know if this was one group of people with these 3 traits or 3 different groups. But it seems that there were those who were scrupulous about the food they ate for religious reasons. Maybe they were former Jews who couldn't break loose from the dietary laws that they'd been brought up with. And you can understand that. If all your life you've been told that eating pork is wrong, a sin, a betrayal of religious faith, then you can see how your palate is likely to react, even if your mind says it's all right now. And of course, they may have been vegetarians for some other reason. The second group are those who had scruple about days, probably a reference to Sabbath keeping. Again, it's easy to see how people whose lives have been governed by such things found it very hard to break loose. The third group were those who didn't drink wine, possibly former adherents of one of the Jewish sects which were abstemious. Here are 3 groups, all doing or rather not doing various things for the sake of their religion. But Paul says they are weaker because they've not grasped the truth that Christ has set us free from rules. But having said that, the attitude he wants everyone to take is that of loving, accepting, and encouraging them. It's all too easy for both sides to become critical and judgmental, and that's what Paul is trying to avoid. Later generations of moral theologians began to distinguish between the primary ethics of Christian living and those lesser things which are up to each person's conscience, adiaphora they came to call them, peripheral, secondary matters. What Paul is anxious about is that brother Christians, all in their way trying to be Christ's people, should not be divided over the route they take in their pilgrimage. They're all heading in the same direction, so don't squabble over the precise route. But addressing those people with scruples, he warns them that they ought to hold their opinions for the right reason. That's to say, not out of convention or superstition, but out of real conviction. Now, discerning our own motives for the way we behave is notoriously difficult. There are many things we do out of sheer conformity. They may be right or wrong, but the reason we do them is because everyone else does, or at least most people do. We conform to the norm. We fit in. And if that's the reason and that alone, then we ought to think again. The second possibility is that we do something or don't do something out of superstition. It might be bad for us, it might offend the spirits or whatever. Superstition can't be condoned, says Paul, that isn't a reason. It offends theology too much to act out of superstition. Let me give you an example. In England, we kneel to receive communion for the most part, at least until more recent years. So I've met with those who from time to time have stopped coming to communion because their arthritis prevented their kneeling. What is in their way is convention. They've acted out of a binding sense of conformity. And equally, there are people who are superstitious about exactly the same thing. That was such an issue at the time of Cranmer that they had to insert a special explanatory rubric in the prayer book to explain that kneeling didn't imply anything superstitious. No, says Paul, the only reason you should have scruples is out of deeply held conviction. And the rather difficult Greek of the first verse of this chapter may imply that others shouldn't go out of their way to argue people out of their convictions. Let them be, appears to be Paul's line. We're answerable to God, and although it may be a matter of indifference to person A whether or not he eats pork, it may be against the ill-informed conscience of person B. But Paul says that A is responsible to God for his decision to eat, and person B is equally responsible to God for his decision not to. They're not answerable to each other in either case, but to God alone. The risk is that we treat people with less respect and honour than they are due, simply because of these matters. We may at best be merely irritated by them, oddities who make problems where none exist, but that can slip into some form of ridicule. And there is really very little more rude than laughing at someone's deeply held convictions, however ludicrous they may seem to us. We're never going to be able to say we love someone we laugh at and ridicule. And love is the governing Christian virtue. And worst of all, it might be contempt. Despising someone, again, can't go along with loving them. And we will never earn the right to tell people what we think if we're not prepared to listen seriously to their point of view. So throughout, the principle is that of being loving, respecting, and not undermining the faith they have. They may be displaying odd attitudes which we want them to grow out of, but if we tackle that the wrong way, we'll harm them rather than helping them. We are to educate them, not coerce them, and at all times we're to respect them. And sometimes that might be very difficult to do. I remember years ago some correspondence in the Church Times about whether a Ugandan bishop had been encouraging or permitting polygamy. From what I could gather, it sounds as if he'd been taking Paul's advice that we've been hearing seriously. He had no doubts that polygamy is not the most appropriate lifestyle for a Christian. But again, it can't be something which is so absolute to be a bar to faith. The evidence of his experience was otherwise. He was trying to avoid laying down rules, but hopefully moving towards people agreeing with him eventually. In the meantime, he avoids ridicule and contempt, and in doing so, he brought exactly those things on himself. We all have to watch it. You can all think of innumerable examples which are much closer at hand. We don't have many people who fall into the categories that Paul was writing about, but the principles remain the same. We're not to ridicule or despise them, but to respect and listen to those who think differently from us, not out of convention or superstition, but out of real conviction.